On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doug Kirby.
It is my great privilege and pleasure to get a chance to talk today to George Chakiris, the man probably best known for playing Bernardo in the multiple Oscar-winning movie West Side Story, for which he was one of the Oscar winners as Best Supporting Actor. That is not the only thing he has done in his life, for sure. A long and wonderful career on stage and in film and on television. His new book is My West Side Story, a memoir by George Chakiris. It's from Lyons Press. That's L-Y-O-N-S. And it's loaded with pictures and fascinating information about George, his career, and his family life, which is just lovely. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Bookshelf.
Todd, thank you and so much for that really, really great introduction and bringing attention to my book. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, sir. I think the fun thing to know right off the bat is that you came from a Greek-American family, which they could have probably heard or probably read about you before, but you had a lot of siblings, and that from a very young age, you fell in love with dancing.
Well, more specifically, at a younger age, I was like a lot of kids. I fell in love with the movies and had always sort of naturally. One of my sisters was loved dancing as much as I did. And so we just loved dancing, and it was an influence of us in our early lives. And then I first studied dancing. I didn't study really until I was 19. It's a bit late for dancing, but it was never too late for me. It was great.
Obviously, you had some innate skills and a love for it, and so getting the official sort of instruction about it and just help you to refine your talent and to grow and to learn. You're talking here about a man named Eduardo Queso, former British radio performer who came to Tucson, Arizona, where you were living at that time, and that you one of your early breaks was getting to sing in this group.
That's right. I didn't realize that an introduction to singing, which I loved as much as dancing, just instinctively. But yeah, it was the Tucson Boys Choir. It was quite a well-known choir. I don't even remember how I came to be part of the choir, but I did. And Eduardo Casso was a wonderful choir master. And when we moved from Tucson, Arizona to Long Beach, he was the one who advised me and told me that I should try to seek out a voice choir in Long Beach called the St. Luke's Choristers. So I sang with them when I was a voice soprano also for about 4 years, every Sunday in church. So it was Mr. Casso was my first experience as a singer in a way, yes.
And that led to you being in a concert sequence in a movie called Song of Love, which some absolutely major film stars, right?
Oh, my, yeah, Song of Love is Paul Henreid, Katharine Hepburn, and Robert Walker. Paul Henreid from Katharine Hepburn played Robert and Clara Schumann, you know, famous composers, and she was a virtuoso pianist. And the choir, we got to sing some of the choruses. We were engaged to sing in a huge concert sequence in that movie. Full orchestra on stage, and the adult choir on one side, and the boys choir at the very back. So it was a beautiful sequence. It was my first time in a movie studio, and because I have always dreamed of movie studios, it was incredible to be in one. It was wonderful, and we got to watch these incredible people as well.
Yeah, among them, young Elizabeth Taylor, a new singer, Mario Alonso. Wow, you just came along at exactly the right time to be in the midst of all these incredibly talented people in the movie business, didn't you?
God, you're right. I never thought about you. You're absolutely right. It was a lucky kind of happenstance and timing. It was really, really, really good.
When you first started training at the American School of Dance, had you known any of the people that were going to be in classes with you? Had you even heard about Max Sennett, who is apparently the guy that's running the school?
No, when I was in high school, there was a girl in high school, Joan Scanlon, who was a dancer, and she had a partner, and they danced for different high school assemblies and so on. And her partner joined the Coast Guard, so she needed someone to dance with, and she asked me to be her partner, and I loved every minute of it. So that was, I got to dance with Joan at some high school assemblies, but Joan was the one who somehow knew about the American School of Dance. She told me about it. And she said that Leslie Caron and Sid Charisse took class there. Ooh. Well, that was all I had to hear. And I took the train down from Long Beach one morning to watch a professional class. There was nobody famous in class, but I just knew that that's something I had studied there. And I did get a job working as an office boy in the advertising department for the May Company downtown Los Angeles. So I worked every day, and I took classes at night. And that was my introduction to entering the professional side kind of thing. But thanks to Joan, the American School was an extraordinary ballet school. And when the ballet companies anywhere in the States, from New York Ballet Theater, et cetera, when they were in Los Angeles performing, they always came to study at the school. So it was really a bona fide, serious dance school, especially in the ballet world.
I'm following the sequence leading up to West Side Story. I realize the most exciting thing about the book is reading about doing West Side Story, but I think these steps that you made along the way that led to another job, that led to another job, are still so typical in the dance world and in musical theater and singing today, that you start out and you meet people and you hear about an audition and you go and you get the role, and then it turns into something and you meet people and so forth. So I think it's really interesting that how you started out and you got hired for The Farmer Takes a Wife with Betty Grable. You meet choreographer Jack Cole.
I mean, absolutely. He was amazing. Yes.
All along the way, you're meeting people and learning from them and getting to work with incredible people. And once again, they lead to different things. You did two movies with Marilyn Monroe, right?
Well, yes, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes and There's No Business Like Show Business. Yes, and I was around Marilyn a couple of other times as well, just coincidentally. But you put it so beautifully, how one thing leads to another and things develop, and that's life, and that's how things do happen.
Another movie that you did is one of my favorite movie musicals. I did this in Summerstock, Brigadoon. But you did the movie with Gene Kelly. So here you are, a dancer and singer, getting to be in a show with Betty Grable, and then you're in a movie with Gene Kelly. This is pretty heady stuff.
It really was. You know, I remember those days of working as a chorus dancer in movies was just such a great time. All of the dancers, we all loved what we were doing. We were so loved working with Gene Kelly and all those amazing people. It was, I look back on that time as one of the favorite times, because everybody was happy. Everybody was happy doing what they were doing, and it was just wonderful.
I have to admit that I saw you in West Side Story before I ever saw White Christmas. So when I saw White Christmas, and I said, wait a minute, one of those dancers there with Rosemary Clooney, that's George Takaris. When did this movie come out? And then I realized, oh, this came out before West Side Story. And I thought, well, wow, isn't that great? Everything that I have ever read about her talks about what a very sweet person she was. And we all know how talented she was, but she was very nice to work with. That's another theme that goes throughout your book, My West Side Story, a memoir, is that you run into very nice people and overjoyed to get a chance to tell people, hey, these were good folks.
Well, you know what? So often I think it just as reputations are talked about and so on, people too often focus on of the bad things and so on. But the thing that I thought about and really I couldn't help but think about it when I was writing this with Lindsay Harrison, the wonderful writer that I worked with, was how positive and wonderful everybody was to work with, because when they're working, it's the best of themselves that they bring to every day. And so you're around people in a really wonderful, productive, and positive atmosphere. It's just, it's beautiful.
It's joyful reading. And doing White Christmas, you get to know Danny Kaye, a wonderful dancer himself, and he is instrumental in getting you a screen test.
And then
you're signed with Paramount.
Yeah, you know, in those days, contracts with studios were always always 7-year contracts. So when I got to do a screen test at Paramount, and I did, they did sign me. It was a 7-year contract, but I was only there for a whole year, but it was a good year. It's so nice to be reminded of people, of Danny, and he was just he was just so generous and so helpful. I still have a beautiful pair of gold cufflinks that he gave me just to congratulate me on my screen test. I mean, people doing really nice things. They didn't have to do, but they were nice. It was great to be around.
There's a funny story in here about how you deliberately did not want to get a role in Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, but somebody you would work with in the movie West Side Story does get cast.
It's funny how particular and choosy you can get even at that stage of the game. But the reason, you know, in White Christmas, the first number that a lot of the dancers worked on was the Mandy number, and all four of the stars on White Christmas were involved in that number. So it was a big number.
Right.
And we all, after that was over, we all heard that there was a number coming up with Rosie with just four guys in it. I guess that rang a bell with me or something like that. Wouldn't it be wonderful to be one of the four guys with Rosie? So when Matt Maddox, who was one of the brothers in Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, and he was fantastic, Matt was one of the great dancers, period. Mm-hmm. He wanted me to come and audition for Michael Kidd. And because I was thinking that maybe the number with Rosie, that maybe I could be one of the guys in that number, I thought I'd rather wait for that instead of audition for Michael Kidd. But Matt did talk me into finally going to, and I didn't want to audition. It's not that I didn't want to audition for Michael Kidd. He was fantastic.
Right.
It's just that I was hoping for the number with Rosie, you know,
right.
So that's what happened.
We're talking, in case you're just joining us, to George Chakiris. His new book is My West Side Story, a memoir from Lyons Press. That's Lyons. The next step here is that you get hired for Judy Garland's Las Vegas debut, and you are going to be one of the dancers, and you would be basically the assistant, a dance instructor, for 4 weeks. This was so neat because you hear lots of things about Judy Garland later on that she was difficult or was unreliable and so forth. But this was not your experience with her at all. You just found her to be the consummate professional, and you got to meet her little girl, who turned out to do pretty well too.
Liza was maybe 13 or something like that, and she loves coming to rehearsal, and she always loved learning something. And because I was one of the assistants who staged Judy Garland's act for Vegas, I learned about the guy. She had 11 guys, male dancers, that Judy did in the show with her. And so I learned what the guys had to learn and taught it to them. And then when Liza came in, she wanted to learn something, as I said. So I was able to teach her some of that, and she learned so quickly. I mean, just like, you know, Judy Garland was very famous for learning really, really quickly, and no need to keep rehearsing and repeating things because she learned it so quickly. Liza was the same. She really learned really, at that age, learned really quickly, you know.
Wow.
That's a great story. At this point, though, you're doing less and less movie musicals because they're kind of entering a stage where they're sort of drawing down on them. Ironically enough, so you go to New York because the work in L.A. is kind of fading away. So you go to New York because that's where the work is. That's where Broadway is. And that leads you actually into this wonderful world of West Side Story.
Yeah. You know, I had no idea how lucky the timing of that was, but when I had a number of friends who had already made the move to New York, so when I got a one-way ticket and went to New York, they put me up on the couch in their living room, so I had a place to stay, and they also knew everything was going on in New York, and the main thing that was going in New York at that time was West Side Story was coming up to its first year anniversary. It opened in 57, and 58 was going to have its first year anniversary. So they were hiring replacements for the Broadway show, and they were also organizing the London company. So I got, just because I was there at the right time,
mm-hmm.
I got to audition for Jerome Robbins for that.
Wow.
And, you know, and then was in the London company playing with him. It was so lucky, but it was so wonderful.
You guys are a smash in London. And even though I had read this before, that you did not play Bernardo in London, I never thought about how long you played Riff on Broadway and how it must have felt peculiar after having this enormous success and a great acclaim that some of the guys in the London cast were invited to audition for the upcoming movie. The producer didn't want you to play Riff, which you were with a character with which you had been intimately associated for a year and a half. Instead, you're being asked to play the rival, Bernardo.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I did the show for a year and a half in London, and doing good. I became, without even trying to, this is osmosis. You become so familiar with the entire piece. Mm-hmm. With all of the characters in it, and also when I was playing Riff, I was playing opposite Ken LeRoy, who was the original Bernardo, and I was opposite him every night. So I'm seeing Bernardo and learning that role without even realizing I was learning it.
Right.
So making the change was smooth in that sense because I was so familiar with everything.
I think that's one of the great things about theater that. Since you're doing the entire show every night, you learn everybody's everything. You understand when the lights come on and everything else. You get a piece of all of that, which is different than making movies. People who have never done anything like that, they just figure when a movie, they start at the beginning and they go to the end just like a show does. But that's not usually the way it's done.
Well, and also, you know, I've often thought, you know, now, for example, is it... the Philadelphia Story, I think, I'm not sure, but I think Katharine Hepburn might have done that in the theater before she did the film. I think she bought the rights and all of that. But having had the theater experience, you become so familiar with you become beautifully aware and of the piece itself. And that is such a help once when you make the transition from the stage to the movie, because you're familiar in a way with it that wouldn't have happened without the theater experience. And that's just a great foundation.
As they're casting the movie, and this is interesting because you don't just tell your story, you tell everybody's stories, that at one point they're considering all kinds of people to play Maria, including Elizabeth Taylor, Carol Lawrence, who had been Maria on Broadway. And you said... too old, they agreed, even though she was 6 months younger than Elizabeth Taylor. It's that kind of business. And then... But they eventually see the one that they will settle on, and that is the great Natalie Wood.
Yes. Well, you know, Bob Weisfeld, who directed Westside with Jerry Robbins, tells a really wonderful story about Natalie and how he came to discover her. He had gone to Warner Brothers to look at a film on Warren Beatty for a possible Tony. And when he saw the film with Warren Beatty, that's when he saw Maria. And as Bob, in telling the story, when he saw that, he said, "That's our Maria." That's mm-hmm. how he first became aware of Natalie. And it was a really serendipitous because she's so beautiful and so wonderful as Maria.
She has that ethereal, hopeful kind of look. Even though I know she wasn't 16 when she did the movie, she has that look of a teenager who could believe that there is a place somewhere where this is going to be okay.
See, you put it so beautifully. That's absolutely right. Yeah.
I do know from having read other books about West Side Story and having read the original book and reading the movie script that there were some things that they changed in sequence, but because they didn't do it from beginning to end, I'm guessing that wasn't particularly a problem for you. They moved songs around from the original show in the movie, but...
Right. Ernest Lehman, who did the screenplay, made a few really, really wonderful changes that were, for example, in the American number in the theater production is done just by the girls,
right?
And in the film it includes the guys, and that just it was so wonderful for the guys. But it's wonderful in the storytelling. And the other thing that they moved around was in Officer Krupke in the theater version. Officer Krupke comes after the rumble, and one of the things that bothered people sometimes about that is how could these guys be so happy when people have just been killed?
Right.
So it's placed in the movie in a really beautiful way, and it involves Riff, played wonderfully by Russ Tamblyn, and these juxtapositions were really made great sense, you know, and worked. Yeah.
Yeah, now they had to change the words a little bit because they were a little politically incorrect for movies in those days. Okay, for theater. Nowadays, nobody would even blink at it. But in 1960, 61, when they're making this movie and releasing this movie, they had to soft pedal some things or change them up a little bit in Officer Krupke, right?
In the theater version, Officer Krupke comes after the rumble, and they're joking with each other, and it's a wonderful number, but they're doing this. It's after the rumble when two people have been killed.
You're right.
And in the film, Officer Krupke was replaced to happen before the rumble, and it makes much more sense.
Cool is moved also in the. On the stage version, Cool comes at a different place in the sequences than it does in the movie. I like where the movie has it much better.
Absolutely. It really, and by the way, when they play in the theater version, Cool is sung by Riff. So when I was playing Riff, I did Cool, every night.
Right.
But placing Cool after the rumble is so important and such a great placement. It works so beautifully for the story.
Yes. This your singing in the movie is you singing, right?
To be fair, in the American number, I did what the guys in the American number did. You didn't really need a singing voice to do it, but I was a singer and I could sing, but that's my voice. But it wasn't a heavy-duty sort of singing role, basically.
Right.
It was just, because it's true here and there in the film, the voices are not necessarily the people who we see on the screen.
Right.
But most of the time, but not all the time.
And I heard that I had read a biography of Natalie Wood about a year ago, and she had told people she was really, really upset because she'd been working really hard on her voice and been singing as they're filming the scenes. She had no idea that Marnie Nixon, who's the queen of ghost singers, that she is going to ghost her in the movie.
Well, Marnie Nixon was really wonderful. She did Deborah Carr's voice in The King and I, and the sound of her voice was seamless between the sounds of the speaking voice of Audrey Hepburn and Natalie.
Right.
I've understood always that, of course, Natalie would have been disappointed that it ended up not being her voice. But in movie musicals, voices being dubbed was a really common practice. Without naming names, I'll just name one. In Gilda, Rita Hayworth, that's not her voice. But who cares? Who else could be Gilda except Rita Hayworth?
Yeah.
But it was a common practice in movie musicals that people who were primarily known for movement didn't necessarily have a good speaking voice, and it was common practice to replace that voice with a singer.
I know we could probably spend a whole hour talking about West Side Story and the highs and the lows of it, the difficulties that accrued and the wonderful things that happened. But that was not the last thing you did. And I don't want people to think, well, he's been sitting around ever since 1961, waiting for a chance to write this book 50 years later.
Yeah.
You did lots of work after that, a number of movies. But this one I do want to mention because I know our time is getting kind of short. You were told by Natalie Wood, she gave you a little advice because she'd been in movies since she was a child, and she said, don't do a costume picture.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure what they were, but I think Natalie, in her early career, maybe she was still a teenager, had done a couple of movies where she were maybe not exactly costume pictures, but that kind of she wasn't happy about them,
right?
And
right.
After West Side Story, I signed a contract with the Mirrors Corporation, and they cast me in a movie called Kings of the Sun, which was a costume picture with Yul Brynner. I was at a party at Harold Marisch's home, and Natalie was there with RJ, and we were just chatting. And that's when she knew that I was going to be doing this film. And her recommendation, very sweetly, was to say, if you can help it, don't do a costume picture. It was pretty good advice, basically.
I know that people can go to georgechakaris.com to find out about your what you're doing now, making sterling silver jewelry. Is that the same website they can go to find out more about your career? Because obviously we couldn't cover everything in 30 minutes.
Yeah. That's that. The jewelry making began as a hobby. It's a very small business, but it's something I love. I love doing. If anybody would be interested in buying anything, the jewelry is available on my website, which is just georgechakaris.com. You know,
very good. So,
but and I really enjoy making jewelry. It's been really a nice outlet, so to speak.
Well, excellent. Excellent. Well, you have had a fascinating and wonderful life, and it is such a privilege to get a chance to talk to you. I was so thrilled when I heard about your book coming out and that they were going to provide me with a copy before we had a chance to talk. And I said, well, I know a lot about him, but it'd be even better to actually read his words. And it was a lot of fun reading it, and I want to thank you so much for making time to talk to me today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for taking the time, because you make it happen. Thank you so much.
Once again, his website is georgechakaris.com, and our guest today has been the legendary star of stage and screen, George Chakaris. His new book, My West Side Story, a memoir from Lions Press, which is an imprint of Roman and Littlefield Publishing Group, Inc., George, again, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you so much. And I can tell just by talking to you how you pay attention and you've done your research, and I really appreciate that.
Well, absolutely. At the least I could do. Thank you again, and you take care. Hope you have a really wonderful day.
Okay, I hope you do too. Thank you so much.
And thanks okay. for sharing your talent all those years ago on the screen, so that all of us can thrill in this magnificent movie.
Thank you. Well, I was lucky.
You take care, and thanks again.
Okay, thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The very gracious and talented George Chakaris, our guest today on The Bookshelf. We're going to do another interview. It's kind of interesting. Before I read the book, I did not realize that his parents were from Greece, and so he's a first-generation American. Next week, we're going to be talking to another first-generation American who had a great movie career, and her name is Ruta Lee, but her real name is Ukrainian because that's where her parents came from, and we'll be talking to her on The Bookshelf next month, so you'll be listening for that. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. We'll see you next time. Until then, God bless.
Here you are free and you have pride.
Long as you stay on your own side.
Everywhere crime in America, organized crime in America, terrible time in America.
You forget I'm in America.
I go back to San Juan.
I know a boat you can get on. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. Everyone there will give big cheer.
Hey! Everyone there will have moved here. Oh.